Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 43 of Utopia to Me, with me, your host, Chris Locke. Hey, how's it going? Oh, I wish I could reach my hand out of your earbuds and just shake one of your hands that you have inside your mind. Listen, it's part two of Peter Stevens on Utopia to Me. I'm excited because there's even more crazy ideas and big laughs this time. If you like the first episode, it gets even crazier and keeps going. So welcome back to Peter Stevens, who's also a huge fan of Utopia to Me, was dying to get on. The guy showed up at my house with like lists and lists. He's a teacher, okay? So he had like really responsibly written and functionally formulated lists of utopian ideas on his laptop the whole time, scrolling through, being like, oh, this one, this one, this one, this one. So it was like a blast. And yeah, just to reiterate, he's one of Toronto, Canada's funniest comedians, improvisers, and sketch writers. Writes for CBC, Irrelevant Show, and you got to see his sketch troupe, Elephant Empire. His sketches will blow your mind. And so we're just going to dive right back in. I'm hanging out here. Bernadette is sitting by the TV for some reason. I think the TV just turned off and it's warm, so maybe she's like, warm vibes from the TV. Actually, she knows that I'm talking about her. Hey, Bernadette, why are you sitting over there? She hates me. All right, here we go. Part two, Peter Stevens. It's so much fun. Enjoy. This is episode two of Peter Stevens.
Woo!
Starting now.
We didn't stop, man. We went from the first one. We've been having a great conversation since.
Yeah. The first one, we went nuts, too. We talked about government surveillance.
Beating the dinosaurs.
Watching a fish watch us while we die.
Rave funerals.
Rave funerals. What else? Oh, trying to learn about our own colonization while feeling terrible about what happened between, to the Aboriginals.
A sensitive man's guide to history.
Yeah.
How do you learn about the horrible things?
Yeah, how do you, can you separate it? You shouldn't probably, right? Because we were talking about colonizing other planets.
Yes, which I was for.
And I was for too, if we do it in a new, evolved, sensitive way. But you didn't mind killing flies that talked.
Yeah.
Like bugs that talk.
You know what? History is not going to look at that decision by me kindly, but we're going to colonize this talking fly planet. We're just going to brutalize them all. And we're going to go, they're only flies. And then later we're going to look and go, we are brutes.
Oh, and also you thought the royal family was nonsense.
Yeah. And I want them to know they're nonsense. Yeah.
Yeah. This is basically part two of a podcast with Peter that is just basically huge ideas.
All right.
Huge ideas. Okay. Two sensitive men that...
You know what? Likely, if you're listening to this podcast, you listened to the last one. So, thank you.
Yeah.
Welcome back.
There we go.
I'm ready to get rolling here.
Okay.
I got one from my utopia.
We have fresh tea.
We got fresh tea. We're fresh up. We're ready to go. Look at the way I'm sitting. I feel like a racer on the starting block.
Yeah, you love it. I also. Oh, we one
I
another
love it.
One other thing that I thought was neat.
Chris feels different
from the first one was women being covered up,
people. Yeah,
sorry. Yes, I just automatically people being covered up more to create more eroticism through our imagination.
Yeah,
build the eroticism back up.
Yeah, imagine if there was a wall between us all the time. You and me and you, listener, between everyone.
Oh, I'd be so horny.
You only had your imagination. They could look like anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so, yeah.
You ready for this?
Yeah, you got some ideas that we didn't get before, so what's that?
In my utopian world, and we can do this today, if you're out there and you agree with this, we can do this today. Maybe you already do it. We don't compliment people for things they didn't choose. So we only give compliments for things that people chose. But you, in my utopia, you would never say, oh, you have beautiful eyes. That is an insult. It's insulting.
Is it?
You didn't choose that. My favorite thing about you is something you happen to be genetically born with. That's a disgusting thing to say to another human being.
Yeah.
Oh, Chris, I love your height.
Right.
Great. So that's how you connect.
It's very
with me?
Superficial.
Superficial, yeah. And it doesn't celebrate a person's personality or
right.
their choices. Their choices.
Their spirit.
If you put contacts in,
mm-hmm.
really stylish.
Then nice eyes.
Lightning bolts on your eyes, you can say that's a choice.
Yeah.
You could say nice eyes. Or like one lightning bolt and one storm, and you're like, this is how I feel some days, but then just a stormy day, that's why I have... So maybe you won't compliment it in the end. That's kind of a awful fashion choice.
Yeah. Well, just aesthetically, you'll be like, I can't compliment this
BS. Yeah. But if you did like it, that's something you would compliment.
Yeah. But you want compliments that speak to the human being's soul.
Speak to their... I don't believe in the soul. So, Chris did a double take straight out of a 90s frat boy comedy.
Oh, my God, you're going to hell.
When the keg arrives.
You're going to hell. Oh, yeah. Let me guess. You don't believe in hell. No, I'm just kidding. No, I don't know about a soul either. It's kind of an abstract, cartoony, romantic, poetic thing. But the essence of the person, the spirit of the person...
The essence or spirit of the person?
You don't believe sure. in the essence either.
If it's made up of things they chose about themselves, I'm all for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then we can celebrate it.
Interesting convo. Does a person, like, you think that the way a person's personality is made up is a series of choices only?
No, it's not.
Yeah.
It is made up of our environment, all sorts of influences.
Yeah.
But what I feel compliments are about are celebrating the choices that we made. That's how I think people end up growing self-esteem.
What about when someone's a baby and you can already tell their personality already? Where did that come from?
Why do you need to compliment a baby, first of all?
I'm not talking about complimenting. Hey, baby.
It doesn't work.
Yeah.
You don't compliment. You neg babies. You don't compliment them.
Yeah.
Yeah, you hold babies.
But where does a personality come from if it hasn't even been had? There are, you can tell the personality of a little baby.
Yeah.
Before all that environment and everything has taken its effect.
Interesting. So you feel wherever your babyness was, wherever you were born, that's what I meant to say. We usually say born.
I'm basically saying before
was.
You were born, before every human God-loving Christian is born.
Yes.
No, I'm just joking. God sticks his index finger into your gray matter and presses
a
little.
Stirs it up. And that's your personality.
Yeah.
So you're saying that's genetic, so don't compliment personality.
By the way, I'm not religious if you're listening to I'm being super sarcastic.
By the way, I'm super religious, and I struggle with this question about hell every day. That a child once told me, which was, if I go to heaven, but my friend's not there because they were bad and went to hell, how is that heaven for me? I struggle with that every day.
Did a kid tell you that?
Kids say the darndest thing.
I love that. Yeah, this is not heaven. Kevin is not here.
Yeah.
No heaven without Kevin.
No heaven without Kevin. And we talked about it, this kid and I. And I said, well, maybe, God.
So this is true.
I'm not a pro heaven guy. Like I mean, I'm a pro heaven guy, heaven on earth, Belinda Carlisle. I'm saying I'm not an expert, I guess, on heaven.
Right.
But I imagined, I told this
Are
kid,
you a really religious person for real?
Super religious. I know who's going to hell or not. I know the 40,000 who are going.
He gave me a really sly shake of the head, guys.
No, guys, I'm all religions. I'm in there deep.
All religions,
every single
just
one, yeah.
shooting out of your hands like fireballs.
If you don't know about Buddhism, Buddhism is great. You got to read the founding story of Buddhism.
Yeah.
All religions as like the rituals and all of the obsession stuff, later, the institution's awful. But
right.
all the founding stories are really beautiful.
About
and I think
actually
everyone...
Gautama, what's his name?
Yeah,
say?
Yeah.
Like a Buddha.
Gautama, Siddhartha. Gautama.
Siddhartha,
yeah.
right. Yeah.
The story of Siddhartha is a beautiful story.
Which one? The actual Buddha or Siddhartha by Hermann Hesse?
Herman Hesse kind of tries to capture.
Herman Hesse made me think of a German being excited about learning Buddhism himself.
Right? Meditate.
He was like, nothing is everything.
Read Siddhartha if you haven't. You'd love it. It's on my list of everyone, check humanity's reading list.
Can I tell you a story about Siddhartha? I was reading it actually
the
only...
The book or the guy?
The book.
Okay.
By Herman Hesse.
Yeah.
I actually only got around to reading it a few years ago.
Yeah.
And Kathleen and I were visiting a cottage in Muskoka here in Ontario. If you don't know, it's a pretty wealthy area for wealthy cottages. And these family friends, it was like this rich people... The woman saw me reading Siddhartha, and she's like, oh, my God. This woman was weird to me for other reasons, too.
Uh-oh.
Like, oh, you're a comedian. You're not very funny.
Oh, she's cool.
Like that kind of person. And then, so I already had that, like, against her in my mind. Like, ugh. Anyways, so the next day, she saw me reading Siddhartha down by the dock, by the lake.
Oh, you're reading Siddhartha.
She's like, I remember that book. I read that. I can't believe people think like that. And I was like, you're toast to me. What's wrong with you? This is such a nice book.
That is my favorite Muskoka moment I've ever
But doesn't
heard
it
of.
Seem reasonable to be a Muskoka moment? That's my problem.
Wow. We'll talk about wealth distribution, I think, later on.
Later on.
In this particular podcast. Or we can get into it now.
No, it's great. No, you have your list there.
Siddhartha is kind of a strange book because the main character's name is Siddhartha, and then he meets Siddhartha Gautama. It's like, just stick with one Siddhartha, Hesse.
Herman Hesse was just... He was obviously excited about learning all this, like within the probably previous 2 years before he wrote the book.
It's a beautiful book, and the core message is we only learn through experience, and it's really great to get that knowledge through that book.
Yeah. Also, I feel like one of the messages is just take it easy, buddy.
Yeah, he goes through so many great phases. Pick up Siddhartha today.
I think since you have listened to a bunch of these Utopia to Me episodes, thank you very much, by the way, you might notice that I allude to Taoism a lot.
Oh.
Do you ever get into that?
I haven't. Maybe. No, I can't remember.
Because
that.
It's kind of like a preliminary version of Buddhism before Buddhism.
Yeah.
You know, like,
Yeah, it's its own. It's got its own rich tradition, and then Buddhism kind of merged with it. You got to have Taoism, Buddhism going on in China. But yeah, like the Taoists. I was writing this,
but Lao Tzu is Chinese.
Lao Tzu, so. Yeah, they're like the alt comedy scene of religions. If you know, like Xiongza,
that makes me feel terrible.
Oh man,
but I love him.
Shungs is the best.
He's got this story about a butcher that knows how to move his machete through a cow. It's beautiful.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it doesn't hit any tendon, any bone, nothing. It's just a groove, baby.
He's got this one about a guy beat. All Shungza does is tell short stories, and then you got to think about it. But some of them are like, there's really one where
he's cheeky.
Like, I'm thinking what that, you know. I know what that fish is thinking. And another philosopher is like, how do you know? How do you know what that fish is thinking? And then Shungza is like, how do you know I don't know that fish is thinking?
Yeah.
And
and he's like, the fact that you already inferred that, how do I know? And like infers that you
you're a real Shungza
assume that I know.
Guys, pick up Shungza today.
But I've never said Shungza. I always say Shangzu.
Oh, say Shangzu. Yeah. Say Sartre instead of Sartre.
No, honestly, I'm not a Sartre guy. Come on.
Who cares about the words?
If you guys listen to the episode, the first one of Peter Stevens, we had a whole Sartre thing. This is a real wank fest.
It's a tragedy to obsess over the pronunciation of something when really the beauty of ideas is when it hits you and washes over you and I see the world in a different way now.
It's funny because Josh Gondelman, a very hilarious comedian and writer from New York, was on two episodes ago, and we had a little discussion about pho, which is actually pho. He calls it pho.
Yeah.
And I'm I'm still a guy that calls it faux, like a real redneck idiot.
Yeah. I say faux as well. I remember being in Vietnam.
Yeah.
There's lots of people there, lots of young people who want to practice English and will speak to you.
Yeah.
And I was hanging out, and I remember asking them, how do I'd like to say it, you know, properly.
Yeah.
I guess properly in Vietnamese. And they had that rising intonation. It's like, pho? And I was like, oh, okay. I heard it and I copied it, and they laughed and laughed. And I tried again, and they laughed and laughed. And I tried again, and I was like, you know what? It's pho. And they were like, okay. We get it.
Because there is an insane, what I understand, insane accent on top of the O.
Yeah.
Which just looks bonkers.
Yeah. And I'll get it. I'll practice.
Pho?
I'll get it. Pho? Yeah.
Can I have some pho?
Pho? Huh?
It's always a question. That's nice, though, that they laughed at you. I think it must
for
be.
Sure.
It must, like, it was an enjoyable experience.
You know what? One thing I love. This is nothing to do with Utopia. Maybe in my Utopia, this happens all the time.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I love is to ask people who don't speak a certain language to do that language in gibberish. So, for instance, I don't speak German, but if I start going, we're like, oh, those are some of the sounds of German.
Yeah.
Or, you're like, what was that? Gibberish?
Yeah, Italian.
Yeah, we get it. What does English sound like?
You know what? I've seen like other European comedians do gibberish English.
Yeah.
I forget. No, I think there's videos on YouTube of someone. I forget where they're from. Somewhere else, but they do gibberish English, and it's so funny.
It's amazing.
Because we don't know how to do it until you see someone that's not English do it, and it's really funny.
My friend Raquel, I owe you so much for this. She recorded her friend in Barcelona speaking gibberish English,
and
all I remember was that it sounds like this. This is what English sounds to a Spanish speaker in Spain, in Barcelona. Her friend. Raul? Earl? Rawl? Rawl? Earl? I'm like, Rawl, Earl? That's not what I sound like at all.
Yeah, I remember the video I saw, too, of the person doing that. The R's were huge.
Yeah.
How we go,
we
rawr,
hit
rawr,
those R's.
Gar, 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 gar. Yeah. Or? Yeah, gar, 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 gar. Yeah, I don't know. Now I sound like, yeah, you can't do it yourself if you're an English first person. Yeah.
You can't.
Okay, sorry. Okay, we got digressed.
No, we're
from
going right back to.
Back to your list.
Okay. Speaking of travel.
Oh, this is your list of little utopian ideas to boost the world.
This is just, we got our world now.
Yeah.
This would just up our game a bit, and we could do it tonight.
Wait, is this the first list?
Yeah, I got three lists. I keep jumping back and forth.
Yeah, okay, whatever then. We'll just you bring up the
this
topics.
Is a wicked
who cares?
One. This is a wicked one. Because we were talking about travel.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. Every city has a maybe not every, but we have a simulation center.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of getting on a plane and going to see the Mona Lisa or going into a pyramid, you just go downtown and you go to the place and they recreate it exactly. You pay your 10 bits. And you've done it.
Right.
Boom, save on air travel.
So cut back on the carbon footprint.
Hugely.
By enjoying a synthetic version of where you would have gone.
Okay, this is, even though it's synthetic.
That, I know, I made it sound bad by doing
that. Yeah, and I think people probably would make it sound bad. But you could blindfold them walking in and they would not know if they were there or not. It is the authentic experience. It is the authentic experience.
You have Leonardo DiCaprio's Mona Lisa.
Yeah. I'm saying if you've seen the Mona Lisa on Google Images,
mm-hmm.
you've had the authentic experience of seeing the Mona Lisa.
No.
You want to see it on the with the background white wall and all these tourists around it and with some plastic or some bulletproof glass in front of it? Sure.
Some old man eating a banana.
We'll
and
set
out of
that
his...
up for you. And then you'll have the authentic experience of being there and seeing it. But you won't have to travel.
Some sort of foreign experience dome.
Yeah. Yeah. You pay 10 bucks and you can do it all. Pyramid here, Angkor there, whatever you want. Great Barrier Reef diving. Yeah. Right there.
Yeah, but I'm a little wary of that because it sounds a little bit like a control thing for the country, like the government.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of keeping its people sequestered in their own little safe zone. Part of traveling is also part of the still having a freedom, you know what I mean? To do what you wish.
Okay, if you're into that kind of travel.
Maybe your experience dome, there's still a point where you have to show your passport.
Yeah, you got to show your passport. I'm drawing a huge distinction between tourism and travel.
Okay.
You want to go see the Mona Lisa and just check your boxes, you go to your whatever center.
I see.
If you want to travel.
So you're not like cutting back on a freedom of traveling.
No, but I think we'd see a lot less travelers and less
flights. Do you think a lot of people travel just to say, I did the thing?
Yep.
And it has nothing to do with actually digging the authentic experience?
Yep. Well, digging the authentic, I think they think, I've been to this spot, I've taken my photo, I now can authentically say I'm there, and that gives me my self-image that I wanted. The travel experience I would promote, if you still want to do this, is you get lost, you are humble, you meet people who don't think the way you think, and you have to accept that that's normal to them, and you start to realize what you think is maybe not normal to, you know, there's normal is relative.
Yeah.
Instead of going to the Mona Lisa and checking your box. If you want to check your box, that's fine. That's cool. Go to your local sim center.
The sim center?
Simulation center? Yeah.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You down?
Yeah.
Great.
What's next? I do get it now.
Okay. The Canadian Senate.
Mm-hmm.
So the Senate is a bunch of old people who are appointed.
Right.
Here's how we freshen up our government.
Right.
It's inspired by the Greeks. This is a real utopian idea for me.
Okay.
You randomly, by lottery, you select the Senate out of all Canadian citizens. They get a government salary of $130,000 a year, and they serve for a few years on the Senate.
Even if we've made a terrible mistake.
It's by lottery.
Yeah.
You're in by lottery. Same as jury duty.
Okay.
I guess they kind of vet some of them, but...
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Senate by law.
That is risky.
What? What's risky? Democracy? Having the people who are part of the democracy, part of the decision-making? Is that risky, Chris? For those of you who aren't here, Chris is now walking around the room like a dictator, just kind of telling who has to be where because he doesn't believe in the people's choice.
I'm looking out my front window giving cut-eye to dumb people.
So that's really... Well, the Senate doesn't have unlimited power.
I don't like how politicians... I think if you choose to be a politician for the most part...
Yeah.
I think the like, and you know, I said it in the first episode with us, I'm not a very political guy.
Yeah.
So this is all just goofs. you know, but like,
not for me.
this is
all bylaws.
This is very serious. Real.
These are all bylaws I'm passing right now.
I think like if you choose like the whole what's it called? Like it's if you choose to be a politician, you're weird.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Because you think that you need to be. The leader, right? In a way, like it's the nobility is gone. It used to be being a politician, maybe there never was nobility, and maybe that was like Hollywood made that up, where it's like I'm going to be the man that changes it for the people. You know what I mean? Maybe that never existed. Maybe it is always about power, connections, and business.
I think you're right. That's how I feel.
Because I used to think, oh, the nobility in being a politician is definitely gone, but maybe what's gone is my naivete about it from when I was a kid. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Maybe it was never noble, and maybe it was always like a weird ego power trip to be a politician, and it was about power and money and greed.
I think there's truth to that, and I think you get that kind of personality type in your leadership, and that's why I want the Senate to be by lottery. To spice up the perspective with the spice of actual Canadians.
Now, on the other hand, maybe a headstrong assertive person is good, and this is devil's advocating it.
Yeah.
A person that is connected with business and not, like,
for instance, like a dictator who would just organize us all militarily. Chris, look what happened.
Bloodbath. But there are still people that would end up in the Senate that are boneheads.
I'm not saying let's randomly select the prime minister. All of those people still exist.
Okay.
Just one House of God, even the House of Commons, it's still elected. Everything is normal. But the Senate, which is right now just old people who are on the payroll and who don't work, are replaced by Canadians educating themselves and saying what they think about each issue.
Passionate
people.
Or not.
Do you think everyone? I think everyone's passionate in the right conditions.
They would be conditioned to be passionate because it would be in their face 24/7.
Man, $130,000 a year? Get passionate.
Yeah.
You know, go down to the Sim Center.
Well, I should be passionate. They're paying me well.
Okay.
Okay.
Big one.
Yeah.
I got a big one to shake up our world.
Okay.
I'm going to shake this whole thing up right now. And you at home, too. And this lady up in Muskoka we talked about.
Yeah. Oh, she's listening to this for sure. She's very interested.
I can't believe they think like that.
I can't believe kind people exist.
That was her pull away in her super large boat on a small Muskokan lake.
Yeah,
lady.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The fish are wearing earmuffs.
I got to read James Patterson. I'll just get my guy to describe it to me. I'm busy.
Oh, no. There's 99% cocoa all over my book. I left it in the sun.
We're pretty sensitive. Like, I just picture her hearing that and looking at her cocoa-covered book and being like, they know
cocoa me. Cocoa-covered books.
They know me too well.
In Muskoka now, you can go to the corner store and buy cocoa-covered books already. That's how pathetic it is. It's like pre-loved.
These are pre not paid attention to. Oh, wow. Oh, wow. But I can put this out and people will think, oh, wow.
Yeah, and now we sell bad children from private schools with cocoa all over them too.
Oh, wow. I can't believe people thought of that.
Oh, wow. Hi, Tim. Why are you so bad? Okay. Shut up.
This is dedicated to her and Tim. And Tim. This is about Tim.
I hope Tim pulls it together.
We got to change the game. You and me here right now. We got to figure it out.
On the couch?
On inheritance.
Okay.
We got to change the game on inheritance.
What do I need to do?
What's our rules? People are inheriting fortunes, and it's staying in the family, and it's dead money because it doesn't. It doesn't reward merit. It doesn't increase creativity. So I think after a generation or two, you can keep what you added on, but you got to get the nest egg back into the pot.
Do you know that I was just reading an article the other day about how Bill Gates and his wife, they are some of the most charitable people, obviously, because of all their millions. But apparently he's convincing his other super billionaire rich friends to get rid of their riches by the end of their lives.
Yeah, of course.
I think that's really neat because there's something shameful about dying.
Lay into you about this. There's something really neat about
shameful about dying still mega rich.
Okay, here's what I 100% have to say to that.
Yeah.
And Bill Gates, I'm really inspired by Bill Gates.
This was an article I was reading.
He is very charitable. But hold on a second.
Okay.
Hold on a second. Anyone worth billions of dollars knows something is up. Look a billionaire in the eye. Look a billionaire in the eye. They know something's up. They know something's wrong. Gates knows something's wrong. He's like, this is weird. Yes, I did something creative. He's kind of the example we like because he's a real entrepreneur.
You mean something wrong with how he was rewarded for his work?
The disproportionality.
Right.
The major way to make big money is to have big money.
Right.
So once you start making those mega, there's no word for it. Mega bucks doesn't cover it. What's a better word?
Bazillion-a-roos.
Once you start making those roos,
yeah, they're just roos now.
I think you wake up in the middle of the night like the queen and just think,
yeah, I'm a fraud.
Something corrupt is going on. And yeah. people are dying, and this, I'm not even doing anything.
Yeah.
I'm not even doing anything to get all this.
So do you think
so
that
don't
he's
think
such
a charitable billionaire? It's like, yeah,
no, but
you
so
owe
do
it
you,
to society.
So do you think that he is a philanthropist now because he's basically haunted by the ghost of Jacob Marley?
I think Marley's doing some work there, both yeah. Bob and Jacob, on his soul. But I think as well, he's an entrepreneur. And after he created Microsoft, he was like, I can't live without solving problems, malaria!
Yeah.
So he's just, I
love charitable it. Foundations also do make, like, tons of money. Like, it's crazy.
Oh, yeah, that's the number one industry to be in, the charitable business. They're all billionaires.
It's true.
Is it?
Well, according to this thing I was reading.
Oh, yeah. Just the idea of, that's such a Western
well,
idea.
Well,
like, I want to help.
Yeah.
Give money.
Yeah. I've got a company that helps. We raise $2 million dollars and we give away $1 million. Yeah.
And the amazing thing is you can't criticize it. Because I was about to lay into the cancer like charity industry.
Mm-hmm. But oh, really?
You can't criticize trying
this
to
This is
cure.
A very controversial two episodes.
So let me straighten this out before I'm... Oh, no, it's already blowing up on Twitter. Oh, no.
Can I just say
death
that...
Death threats, but I'm a white male too. Sorry.
Oh my god. Can I just say that I am an objective observer of
no
this
one's gonna come after me. Yeah,
I'm just saying that I'm an objective observer that allows people to speak their mind on my podcast.
Yeah,
okay, go attack. Yeah. The cancer charities.
It's 100% working on a cure for cancer is important. It's too late, I'm already done. But this Western concept of like, I want to help, throw money at it, I want to help, throw money at it, with no understanding of where money goes, you know, what, how many different organizations, what are their methods? Are we just funding agencies to collect more money? What actually gets results? Instead of look at that, you know, let's speed up the cure for cancer. Let's look at who's getting results and try to up what they have. Instead of like, I don't want cancer, I'll give you money. I don't want this, I'll give you money.
So regular charitable people, you're saying, don't do the research behind who they're giving the money to. Which
yeah.
it could be more valuable to do that before giving any money.
I just, in my utopian society, we don't give money straight up. We think about it. And we want to hear, you know, why this is, we want to hear from experts, we want to hear from people to be like, yeah, this organization, this is good, instead of just this general stamp of like, yep, giving money helps, because we know it doesn't. Giving money, I'm not talking about cancer now, I'm just talking straight up about money. You don't solve problems. Remember, you know, your uncle who's going through a hard time right now and he's on your couch, you don't just give him $10,000 and that like solves it, you know.
Right.
He's asking for it, he wants it. Look at his business plan. There's holes through the whole thing. You know? Anyway.
So what do? You just pay for his enrollment in a business school?
Yeah, you can give him some money, but you got to see that business plan. You got to, like, let's, you know, the nitty-gritty, I guess the real takeaway is just throwing money at it is only for our own guilt and our own hope that we can do something. It's the same as liking something on Facebook.
Right.
Yes, it is doing something. But it is strange that we don't want to know what that thing is we're doing.
Right.
Yeah. That's what I feel about that.
Hmm.
That said, sponsor me in the cancer walk. I am walking for cancer and I'm raising money.
I think it's interesting because, you're basically putting your finger on the fact that people do walk around with a guilt complex consistently. But then have these kind of like quick, easy ways of alleviating themselves of that guilt and moving on instead of, analyzing what the core problem is.
Yeah. It came out for me. I kind of expanded this idea to the cancer fundraising industry, but that Red campaign for AIDS in Africa, that campaign blew my mind because it was like, we're branding this idea of red, buy red gear, and you're fighting AIDS in Africa.
Which is killing thousands of people, real people.
But even to say Africa, what a disrespectful concept
of
like
right.
Botswana, like Egypt.
Yeah.
It's like where? Sierra Leone? We're like, we don't want to hear that. It's
right.
just some vague idea, and it's like, that one just upped the gear on vagues, and we're like, throw a 20 at it, and I'm good. It's like, no, it's not good.
A 20 at an abstract concept of Africa.
At a brand. Ugh.
Wow, that's great.
Anyway.
Interesting.
It's too late. I'm already dead on Twitter. Spoke against fundraising.
What's that? Obviously, Sarah Palin, really remember? Oh, she thought Africa was a country?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did she?
Yes.
I wonder sometimes, does she play into it?
Like the dits?
Yeah, because they have the Middle America. I want to vote for
a leader.
Does
it seem like any of them play into it? That'd be a huge game.
George Bush is a... George Bush Jr. Senior is pretty wicked. If you've read his autobiography, it's like, what? But anyway,
I didn't read it. You read it?
Maybe he's the greatest character actor of all time. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Ending inheritance. I guess, whatever. We'll just move on.
You just don't want huge money thrown around willy-nilly without sort of like a...
Here's where
a foundation behind it for something greater towards the greater good for all of us?
I want merit to be rewarded.
Okay.
I am very lucky, way above my contributions to society. And I've been sent around the world teaching kids. It's part of my job.
Yeah.
Comedian, and I teach and travel, if you're just tuning in.
Oh, right. You established that in the first episode. Sorry.
I remember I spent...
I'll say that in the intro, too.
I spent some time in Monaco. And there were people on the beach there, and they're all filthy rich.
Mm-hmm.
And I spent some time in Ho Chi Minh City, or Saigon in Vietnam, and I met this guy who works 18 hours a day or more. He was learning English. He has no education from the government, really. He mm-hmm. moved to the city. He's learning Mandarin at a restaurant because he's like, the future of tourism is in Mandarin. And I was like, this guy is... The hardest, Meng was his name, was the hardest working person I've met. He's the hardest working person I've met.
Right.
He's working very hard. And is he in his life going to be rewarded proportionally? That person on the beach in Monaco, just rolling around out there.
Yeah.
If you put it on a graph, do they work as hard? I don't know. I just want merit to be rewarded.
He's working for those really rich people that are just like soaking in the sun.
They're like, roll around on the beach. We want to see it. Go. He's like, no. Like,
so what do you think about athletes then? Professional athletes.
What about athletes?
And how much they get made? Their contracts are insane.
Yeah, but that whole industry is bloated. Like, it's funny that they get insane contracts, but they're still getting ripped off because the owners are getting huge money.
Yeah.
That's
isn't that crazy?
Yeah. Professional sports is... The core of professional sports really is people watching it.
Yeah.
So it's hard to criticize the athletes when everyone's tuning in.
But, right. We choose to worship it, basically.
We want our gladiators.
Wow. This is the most thoughtful... I hope my brain is still working. I'm kind of zonked.
You're feeling zonked?
No. Let's go. I want to amp it up.
Chris's eyes are closed right now because you can't see. He's closed and he's...
I'm actually saying amp it up in a daydream I'm having. Amp it up. Great. I'm referring to something else right now. Yeah, that's going on in my imagination. I'm watching a Jason Statham movie. Amp it up. And Peter's just talking to me.
Yeah.
A sleeping man. Okay, what else? I'm not zonked, but I think this is because if you're listening to this, this is the second episode with Peter Stevens because he's
zonked.
A bazillion of ideas. But we're still made all the episodes in the same day.
Yeah.
So it's just been like crazy idea city.
Okay. You want
and here
one?
We go. Yes.
Okay, there's teleportation instead of cars, but let's skip that one. Let's go right to...
The most funnest one. You're like... Okay.
Do you think... I want to ask you this. Do you think we could keep everything afloat right now and switch to a four-hour workday?
Well, to be honest...
Uh-oh. He's being honest.
In North America, right?
Yeah.
From what I have witnessed...
Yeah.
People that... Half the people work from home, basically. Yeah. Not half, but you know, a good percent do. And when I did work in an office for 4 years, If everyone's honest with themselves, they're maybe working 4 hours a day. And that's like office stuff. That's like, I'm not talking about like physical labor. I don't know about physical labor. But when the construction workers work outside and they keep wake you up in the morning because they start working at 7 or whatever, they're usually done by noon. So maybe we're already there.
I think we're in the 24-hour workday now. I see people.
Oh, because we can't shut our minds off?
Yeah. I think we've expanded the workday. Remember, did you remember like Sundays used to be no shopping?
Yeah, well, that was attached to a like Christian religious thing too, right?
For sure. And we were like, we're not really a Christian culture, so shopping all the time. I wonder if we can revisit that and be like, this is not a Christian thing. This is a take a break thing.
Take a damn break day.
Take a damn break, yeah. the satellites crash to Earth and no one can social media.
Yeah, but then how do I get my Sunday KFC bucket?
Oh, forget it. Start it all up, boys.
Yeah.
I was reading about labor history and the wars in the streets of America from the 10-hour workday to the 8-hour workday. And I was like, oh, yeah, people fought for that.
Yeah.
I just want to put that out there. In my utopia, I don't know if we're there. Mm-hmm. But are we thinking about the 4-hour workday, or are we fighting for it? Because we keep inventing new things that we're like, oh, look, oh, my computer, and now I can do this so quickly.
Yeah.
And it's like, if these things are really improving productivity, why are we on the 8-hour workday?
I also agree with you that people become their job now in this culture, and they don't turn it off.
Yeah.
Because it's obvious that like even people, families with kids, it's hard for them to even focus on their kids when they get home a lot of the time because they are texting, they are checking emails at home, or just business is on their mind. Because everything's so damn expensive here that if you snooze, you lose. And that's our culture now.
Yeah.
So you're constantly always like, because as a comedian, we're independent businessmen and women ourselves, and so you're kind of like sitting on a couch watching a movie sometimes, taking a break, but you're still like planning in your head like, what's my next move? Because
when you did your daydream just a couple minutes ago, you missed a gig for $600.
Yeah,
I came through.
Oh, I'm missing gigs left, right, and center.
Just every time you sleep.
This podcast is a huge waste of money.
Oh, cash on the table. You're leaving cash on the table, Chris.
I don't know. It's embarrassing.
Table.
Yeah, if you're listening to this, I don't know, send me a buck. This is all for free. This is all for the love. I'm an idiot that constantly thinks about my work all the time because I love doing it.
Yeah.
I'm one of those idiots.
Yeah. Great. You're moving our culture toward the 24-hour workday. I think it'd be cool if when you sleep, you could visit each other in your dreams.
I honestly feel like I'm advertised to in my dreams now.
Yeah.
Have you noticed that?
I work for them. We are advertising in your dreams.
Thanks.
Yeah.
No, because I think it's obviously not true. I don't think that corporations are intercepting my dreams and advertising to me, but I feel like because most of the day is spent searching the online, which is always constantly advertising to you, you have this weird sort of like thought pattern in your head that is used to like the language of advertising. So then you have these dreams where you're like, you wake up like, I have to buy this album. Like, it's really fucking weird.
Yeah.
Like, do you ever get to feel like that?
I don't.
That's nice.
Yeah. I feel really lucky that I don't. I guess I don't watch a lot of ads anymore.
Well,
I have blocked them all. Most of my media comes through online, and I'm blocking ads with different, simple ad block software.
Really?
Yeah.
Like even like something on the side of Facebook wall or?
Yep.
What is it?
I'm so anti-ads because we use Facebook with the high school students.
Mm-hmm.
We organize them in groups before we go on our trip.
Yeah.
And I believe in the Ontario board of like, we were always keep ads out of the classroom.
Yeah, of course.
Like, now they found their way in.
Facebook.
They're there in schools all day long.
You ever talk to the kids about that? Students about it?
All the time.
What do they say? What does the youth...
Same thing we said when we were young, man. Ads don't affect us.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I can still remember a million jingles from like grade 8.
Yeah. And you had to buy, every time you did the jingle, you probably forget this, but then you had to buy the product right away or you or your neck hurt. That's how good the jingles were.
Wow, I'm so scared. Okay, what's next?
Okay, let's do something less scary.
No, it's great.
Okay, more scary. time to up it. I've got one here about, in my utopia, it's about children. We yeah. really make children feel loved and stable.
Okay.
And this was a big eye-opener for me. I don't know if everyone agrees with this, but I read The Denial of Death by Ernest Becker. It's not a great book, but there's some great ideas in it. And one of them, he was like, the idea of death is crippling to our self-esteem.
Mm-hmm.
And if you ever met a kid who learned about death straight up, the truth of it, really early, they develop huge anxiety.
Wow.
So
what's the book called?
The Denial of Death.
Oh, right.
It's all about, it's about how everyone denies death, but when you're an adult... basically, a healthy childhood, we straight up lie to kids. I didn't used to believe this, and now I'm totally on board. In our my utopia, we straight up lie to kids about death. We straight up tell them, you know, we kind of make a vague. Or you,
well, that is what religions used to do when they were more prevalent.
Yeah, and we're losing religious concepts, I think, in our culture,
mm-hmm.
and we're not sure what to replace it with. So I'm saying,
yeah, because
don't
that's the thing. Like,
well,
but, yeah, we are not religious, but it is. There was a positive aspect to them being established over thousands of years.
Yeah,
and
I totally
it was
agree.
About the community. It was about family, and it was about you know, a collection of ethical ways of thinking, morality. So. It's good to like break down the hypocrisy of religion and all that bullshit that was attached to it. It is attached to it still. But yeah.
It's this universal story of we live on.
Yeah.
Because you need that for your self-esteem. Because it's so... when you're an adult, you can be like, oh, we die and then it's all over. Great. You intellectualize
but
it.
Also
you make
maybe
jokes,
some sort of non-bullshit unifying philosophy that is empowering to living your life to the fullest.
When maybe when they're 13 or they're 16 and you're like, look.
And then you're like.
Here's how it really is.
You
so you
are,
better live hard,
You
Bungie.
Are just stardust.
Yeah. But yeah. I'm really into. And the other thing I want for kids is that everything they do is great.
I think you should tell children, if you go and stand in front of an oncoming truck.
Yeah.
You will burst into a magical rainbow of Skittles.
Yes.
And then they're like, that's comforting.
Yeah.
More truck deaths.
I just think, hey, you go to a place, it's, you know, I don't know a lot about it. Oh, look, what's this? What's on TV? Oh,
that's
yeah.
your utopian idea?
Look, I'm just saying, don't make them confront death. If the TV's on and it's there, great.
What if they're 6 or 5
Uh-oh.
And a family
soon.
Member passes away?
Yes.
Where did the family member go?
For sure. They've gone. We love them. We're not going to see them anymore. They've gone. I don't know. I'm snowballing here. Sandboxing, whatever the term is when you don't have any idea what's going on. You're trying to explain death.
I'm just sandboxing here.
You give them like the heaven spiel, but you can kind of new age it. You're like, they're at a disco that never dies. What's on TV? And but you keep that conversation alive for later when they're 16 and they're like, they're never coming back. They're dead. No one knows what happens when you die. Let's go bungee jumping to feel a little more alive.
Yeah.
But welcome to being an adult.
Yeah.
But as a kid, I really do. After reading Becker, I'm like, we have to protect ourselves from the truth. I've never believed that before.
Well, one thing I do really like about how adults do deal with children in our world now is we do, for the most part, if you're a well-adjusted adult and parent, we do, for the most part, shower children with a grand idea of how fun and happy life is and how you do benefit from playing and sharing and having a good life with other people. I think that is part of how our culture already.
Yes.
I don't know.
Most cultures.
Yeah. Exactly. So I don't think a lot of people give the hard truth about death right now. Anyways, they do probably smoke screen it a bit.
It's true, but I think this our culture right now is kind of up for grabs because consumerism has got us addicted to new things. We have no time for old ideas and like religious traditions. They still pervade our culture, but we're like not interested.
Right.
You know, I find it so funny the rise of yoga. You know, I think we're so spiritually vapid. We attached onto yoga of like, look at this rich tradition. They have all these rich traditional answers.
Oh.
And then we consumed yoga and was just like, yes, now it's power yoga, a half hour better abs. What did we do? It's not tasty anymore.
Can I tell you, so can I take a quick digression that you just influenced? Because we were talking about Buddhism and Taoism. I can't even remember if it was this episode or the first one. I think it was a mix of both. But there's a part of me sometimes that worries that I'm getting this super like candy coated, you know, fun chocolate version of Eastern traditions, right? Like it's being like, sorry, we got distracted, Kathleen. We have to wrap it up soon, but we are going to wrap it up soon.
Okay,
we
one
got
more day,
10
one
minutes
more,
left.
I got one more. I got one. Okay, great, great.
But
we
you
have,
already
we have
agree?
10 minutes? We have 10 minutes left.
So like being in a, being a North American.
Oh,
yeah, about 10 minutes ish. So being like a North American or Westerner, being like, I like Taoism in snippets as I race off to my job.
Yeah. Because all religions for us, or all those religions we didn't grow up with, are de-stress tools to cope with a stressful, productive capitalist life.
Or a stressful religion that we did grow up with.
Oh. We're like,
it's like a nice counter, it's a relaxing counter religion.
Because the institutions are stressful.
It's basically being like, let me get in, out of this hot water into this lukewarm water. It's more comfortable.
Because when you and I were talking Taoism, we were talking the stories and the ideas, not the having to light stuff for your ancestors and like really observe it.
Right.
Yeah. So,
but also, what do you think about like, you think we go over to China and
right now,
Japan or something right now and everybody is super mystical, like that's embarrassing for us to think as well.
Yes,
because they're just like probably working and doing their own thing too, and they're like, what? Oh yeah, I guess that is a part of our culture. But
oh, it's very similar to here.
Yeah,
imagine them, someone from China coming over here and going, is everyone super Christian? And you can say, you know, in rural areas, it seems to really still be important. And you can find someone who will talk your ear off and go, that blows my mind about how.
Yeah, in China, there's probably predominantly dominated by people that don't have time to meditate either.
You got it. Cities
it's our
are
all
not
romantic.
Of,
we, it's our romantic.
City,
we live vicariously through this romantic idea of, you know, living in the mountains and the clouds are our hair.
Yeah. That's how I always think of clouds. Just combing my clouds, you know? Yeah.
Like, yeah. You ever read any of that sort of like Zen poetry, those guys?
No, I don't.
They were all like, they were all outcasts of their society that lived in the mountains getting drunk.
Yeah, I don't want to hang out with a guy who thinks like his hair is a cloud. Like, come on, man. Just
well,
talking my ear off.
That was
about,
a poetic.
Great. Your beard's the river. Great.
It was a poetic illustration of how the clouds would be wisping by your head as you're meditating up on the mountain. All right.
Okay. To bring it all, this is a last idea.
Is this the hammer?
This is the hammer. We've been talking about it. And this is like a tweak for this world, but in my utopia, we've always known something's up with big cities. They don't nurture us. The urban experience doesn't nurture us.
Right.
Here's what I really love. And I thought of this in Brampton.
This might be the last episode ever.
This is the last episode ever. We've covered everything. It all as with,
you brought this up in Brampton, did you
as
say?
As with civilization, it ends in Brampton.
Brampton, Ontario, by the way, is a small suburb town.
Actually, is it a city? Actually, it's a growing suburb. It's 400,000 plus people.
Is that true?
And yeah, it's huge now.
Oh my God.
And it's better than Mississauga.
Oh my God.
So for those of you not in this area, I started a war right there.
Yeah.
Okay, but anyway.
It's true.
I grew up in Brampton. I was visiting my parents.
Brampton, Ontario.
And I walked to the movie theater, which was a dangerous experience. It's 10 minutes from their house. And I watched Mad Max, this post-apocalyptic. And I walked out of the movie theater. And I looked out across the parking lot.
Oh, so this was recently, this Mad Max, the new Mad Max.
Yeah.
Okay,
this wasn't in like the 70s when I wasn't born.
The 80s, man.
Okay. I was four. I was like, no, this is the new Mad Max. I walked out. I saw the parking lot. And I was like, this is the wasteland. It's
okay.
We just paved everything, and there's no community.
Yeah.
In Mad Max, they had it good. I started to think about, like, at least they were all together, all the war trouble guys being like, hey, man, what's up? There's no community. It hits so hard. I don't know the name of everyone on my parents' street.
Yeah.
Where is our community? And I was like, that's why we're staring at screens all the time.
Yeah.
It's like our community is not geographic. So here's the idea. In my utopian world, we need more of a geographic local community.
Right.
One idea is that the government pays for your block to have a block party. Okay, so you have a block party, and on that day you get to meet everyone, and it happens more than once. You got to know the people on your block. They're your block family.
I don't mandatory care block
like,
parties.
Mandatory is the harsh, like, it's what we all want. We all want community.
Yeah.
We all want to see a face we recognize. It is awful to our souls, for
maybe
you, Chris, who believes
I
in the soul.
I pose this to you. Maybe the reason in our real world the reason we have...
I'm already losing it.
It's unfortunate. It could be unfortunate, but maybe we say we want that, but aren't we the ones that made ourselves evolve into this isolated, self-absorbed mini world in our heads? Maybe we evolved to this point because of a deep inner selfishness that is just innate in human nature. Maybe we did do the community until we were had the luxury enough to not do it anymore.
I hear what you're saying,
and that's gross, but I wonder.
What I'm saying is I do hear what you're saying.
Yeah.
But I don't think any version of a culture is the perfect expression of what people wanted.
Right.
So here's the starting point. We all are selfish. Yes, yes, yes.
I'm saying you're going to be doing a...
We all want community.
Yeah.
So we get community in this life. We go to work and we have our work community.
Yeah.
You know, we have communities.
Yeah, we get it in snippets.
So the culture that you live in creates how you can express your want of community.
Yeah.
And I'm saying we need to up our game to have more encouragement for knowing the actual geographical local people in your area. Like, culturally,
so like,
think of them as your
family.
We
are comedians. So we go to the comedy bar here in Toronto.
Yes, we do.
And everybody's there, and that's our community. But what you don't like about that is it's still an isolated community because it's... we've basically chose the type of person we want to be surrounded with. So you
I don't
want,
mind that. That's cool. We always. We
but
all,
you want
we,
like a block party where some big, weird guy in sweatpants is farting all the time and you have to be his friend.
This is exactly what I'm talking about. We assume the people in our lives are the ones we love and everyone else is a farting dude in sweatpants. They're not, man. There's cool people
everywhere. I assume people think that about me.
Well,
that's the problem.
But if they meet you, you spend time with anyone.
Yeah.
Do you have anyone that you go to like a convenience store and you see the same cashier?
Yeah.
Do you learn any of their names?
Not really.
Not even
one?
But
I like them.
You know how seeing a face, they recognize you, share a moment, and you light up? We all know what that is. It's good. We like that.
Yeah.
Your street, our street, your whoever you live, that it's got to be full of that. So when you walk up and down, you're like, hey, there's Roger, the kid I don't like, but he's part of the community.
Yeah.
Oh, there's Angela. There's this. I know them. I've had experiences with them. I don't have to smell their farts and live in their jogging pants. These are just faces of people I know. That's what I want. I want FaceTime with a geographic local community.
Right.
And I want our government to like, that's a government. You got to provide what we want. We want community. Give it. Stop.
So then make it mandatory.
Illegal sponsorship scandals. No, mandatory is an ugly. Anything mandatory. For me, I'm big into let people do what they want. Because anything mandatory will create the pendulum. I'm not talking about mandatory. I'm talking about opportunity. If you create the opportunity and make people feel loved, they'll do cool things. Those communities will grow.
It is interesting how much it's changed in my life growing up. Because I did grow up in a neighborhood where you kind of knew the surrounding people and you had them over for dinners and parties and stuff. And it's not like that anymore.
What is going on? Isn't that so strange? I think it
maybe
makes...
it's because we're... Yeah, you're right about the urban scape of it. It's definitely a city thing. Because city, you think the purpose... Like, oh, I wouldn't live in a city if I didn't work here. And that is exactly the definition of the city. Is a place to just constantly be on the hustle, working and hustling. And so it is like a sort of like self-absorbed sort of zone to be in. And I feel like if like it's almost like what we were talking about, the 24-hour workday, it's almost like having a block party with strangers that you don't know. You're wasting time. I could be working and networking in the scene of the people that I...
Yeah, but what...
I know.
But you are working. You could sell things to all the people. That's cash on the table, Chris. It's cash on the table. Chris, it's cash on the table.
I think that your block party idea is perfect for insurance salesmen.
Oh, God. Oh, it's come back. It's come back to serving the interests of consumer capitalist
society. That was
society.
Two huge hours.
Yeah.
So if you guys listen to part one and you liked it enough and you listen to part two... Thanks so much. Is there anything lastly you want to say that we could do quickly?
Honestly?
Yeah.
Yes. No, honestly, there's so much more.
There is so much more. I'm looking at his list.
But, you know, you have to end somewhere.
Yeah, we'll have you
even
on.
Even if you don't want to, even if you don't want it all to end. Don't tell a kid
you
got to
teach me these ad blockers.
Teach you the ad? Just man, Google will teach. Google teaches us all. I'll teach you the ad blockers.
Is there an ad for ad blockers?
Oh, everything's corrupt, man.
Doesn't Adbusters magazine have ads in it now? No, I'm just joking.
Don't they always?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Pencils. So did you have fun, though?
Chris, I had a blast.
That was like... Yeah, that was heavy. There was a lot of grand ideas.
Yeah.
And some of them controversial. But that's interesting because then it sparks people talking about the world we're in now.
Yeah, I really enjoy listening to your podcast. I look forward to listening to more guests on it because I like when they challenge me.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
There you go. Maybe someone will listen to this and come on directly just to challenge everything you said.
Yeah.
That'd be fun.
Cool.
Gee, I'd love to like
do that. Get the anti-Peter on here and just have him trash talk me the whole time.
Did you listen to David Hetty's episode?
No Choice?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great one out there. If you want to start with one, David Hetty has a nice, clear vision.
Yeah.
It's a good food for thought episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, good. You already know that one.
Yeah, well, then we're definitely on opposite ends of the spectrum.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
Cool. Then we ended with a nice shout out to another episode. That's very nice.
Yeah, I thought that was very organic.
Any last things you want to say? You're going to overseas to teach children.
Oh, yeah. If you want to see me in the next month, just come to Beijing or Hong Kong. I'm just teaching and traveling. Ho Chi Minh City, Phnom Penh. Oh, I shout out Cambodia, Phnom Penh, Siem Reap.
I think we have one Asian listener, so
yeah.
I don't know where they are exactly, but I'll have to check the statistics again, but yeah,
cool.
We might have one. Also, you said when you come back, you're going to dive more into stand-up. Are you going to do Elephant Empire shows
I'm
as gonna well?
I'm going to dive into doing more Elephant Empire in Toronto. I'm going to dive into stand-up. I saw Now release the nominations for
best stand-up,
and I was like, that seems like a simple, nice goal. I'm announcing that I'm gonna get nominated.
Did you know that I won that a few years ago?
Of course, everyone knows that you won that. You deserve it every year.
Okay,
you listening out there?
Yeah,
yeah, for sure.
It's
you won
a weird thing.
You're very inspiring to me. That makes me. I was like, yeah, Chris really did it. I love the way that you did all that stand up, and then you recorded an album.
Yeah.
And lots of other people in the community are doing that now. And I was like, yeah, you really led the way on a really good, funny, fun move. So if you're out there and you like comedy, keep doing it. Keep testing your material and definitely work towards recording an album. And then you can share it with people across the land. What's your album called?
The World is Embarrassing.
The World is Embarrassing. Yeah. Yeah, man, I bought it the first day out. It was like Chris Locke recording an album. I couldn't be there. I was at Tolev's.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was another great one.
Yeah, I heard it was great. Yeah. I couldn't be there.
Tim Gilbert put out an album.
It's awesome.
Yeah. What's it called? It's got the picture of him like the it. Help me, I'm sick.
I think, yeah. Cool. Yeah.
I love what's going on in Toronto and
so you're rejuvenated now.
I'm rejuvenated.
You're already known in this city as an amazing, brilliant comedian. And now you're known after these two episodes of the podcast as an ideasman.
Just a windbag. like, oh, Peter, the windbag?
Yeah. The windbag. The cloud is my hair. Yeah. And then, so you're going to dive back into it more after this trip.
I am. I look forward to seeing you in Toronto back in August. Come check out Peter Stevens.
Yeah.
I'm sure if you Google me.
There's good stuff.
Yeah. And there's a motorcycle company called Peter Stevens, I think. So even if you buy a motorcycle for them, that's kind of cool. That's kind of a cool thing.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much for coming on. And everybody, if you're listening, buy a motorcycle. All right, everyone. That was the finale, part two of Peter Stevens on Utopia to Me. Thanks so much for listening. Peter, thanks so much again for coming on. It was a blast. I loved hanging out on the couch, drinking tons of tea with you, and talking about all your amazing ideas. And yeah, I was literally exhausted after making these two episodes. I think I went to bed at 11 p.m. that night because we talked so much, and it was really hearty. Guys, if you're listening... and you loved listening to Peter, follow him at _PeterStevens on Twitter. And look, if you're in Toronto or maybe more other cities, check out his sketch troupe, Elephant Empire. They're like the best shows ever. And all the other actors and comedians in the sketch troupe are amazing. And Bernadette doesn't hate me. During the podcast, she looked over and smiled at me. So that was very nice. Huge cat smile. And yeah, follow us at Utopia to Me and follow me at Chris Lock Fun. And that's all the promo and what's up I'm going to say tonight because it's hot in here. I'm starting to sweat, so I feel like I should have a shower before I go to bed. Picture that in your imagination. Cold shower, nighttime, night shower. Doesn't that sound like a weird movie from the 70s? Night shower. Who's watching you scrub? Anyways, enjoy the planet. Enjoy your life. Thanks so much for listening again. Thank you.
Thank you.